Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country. Anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hello and welcome to IMP's AEW Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and to every person who's contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network: One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide, of which Floyd and myself guest on to count down the 64 best AEW wrestlers, put them into a tournament, and have a big debate to try and figure out who's going to be the best one. The first two episodes are out now, because it's fair to say, 64 people, that's quite a lot of matches to get through, quite a lot of different pairings. Sam put in all the effort to rank them together and put them into like a little tournament bracket. We just went through them all and eliminated them. We put the match pairing together. The first round took the entire first episode, which probably shouldn't be a surprise. Obviously, episode two, things get wrong. And controversial. Controversial from the get-go. Which is great to see. And I'm very much looking forward to this Friday's episode when it goes up, because oh boy. When we finished that recording, I was like, I'm looking forward to that one. I'm looking forward to that one going up. So if these next 30 minutes aren't anywhere near enough imp for you, I do guest in long form on Sam's show this coming. And if you're subscribed to the main Social Suplex feed, you will already have this show. So anyway, you can go catch there. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp. Probably should have done that before I did the ramble there. And this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was. 30 minutes of San Antonio, Texas, of AEW after the pay-per-view. So it's things continuing on. It's not really shows with hot momentum in these times, supplying us with like a top-tier match or top-tier main event to just really have you leave the show in a really positive form, even though a lot of the other best parts of the show are building and hyping. Always find with AEW, it's interesting because the quality of the wrestling is always there and it's not as dependent as like a really strong writing moment. Like, you don't really need that in AEW. The shows are plenty enjoyable as they are. Like, whilst their competition is dependent on that stuff, AEW can put some good wrestling matches on and you'll have a good show. Arguably, they've made their own life way easier. But we are continuing the bubble for Hangman Page and Samoa Joe dancing once again. We're building up towards Blood and Guts for the women. We've got the women's tag team titles as well. So there is plenty going on, even if none of it is at its apex, which is absolutely fine. I'm absolutely fine to have these things. And also, on both shows, absolute top tier main events. Both of them were absolutely incredible. And I reckon most of you listening, if you've watched both Collision and Dynamite, then you've probably got a different favourites of which match you thought was the best. I'll get into it, obviously, talking about which one I preferred. Third is strong. They were both incredible. So a really good week for AEW in terms of leaving you on a good note, which is something I say all the time when talking about Collision, because, you know, I'm getting through my weekend, stuff's happening, I'm not really always in a wrestling mood come Sunday. By the time I've left Collision, I'm so hyped for Dynamite. It seems to happen every single week. They always leave me on a good note. So anyway, let's get into it. Let's to San Antonio, Texas for both Dynamite and Collision, starting with the AEW World Trios Championship, the Ops versus the Hurt Syndicate. Before we got to the match, we were showed a doctor's room bit from Hangers at WrestleDream, an angry cowboy shouting, "Have you lost your goddamn mind?" And that led us into the match. So let's jump on it. Let's play a little sound clip. Let's play a sound clip from the Ops versus the Hurt.
And he's got the hooks in! And the MVP with no choice but to tap out!
The champions came out to Joe's music in a sign of their shift to being behind Joe. And quite a few nice little pairings in the match as well. Like, sure, Benjamin Shibata was nice, but they all knew the pairing the fans wanted. Meat! As Bobby Lee Lashes stepped to Hobbs. Only for Joe to immediately tag in and rob the crowd. They knew what they were doing. Joe's still badass enough to get the Joe chance from his punches, but nay worries, they ain't chanting for a headlock. San Antonio fully in on the meat charge. Two big beefy men and all that. Even cheered for MVP getting his one ball in. He's got the one thing. Just let him do it. But with a newly turned heel champions needing momentum, plus the match had MVP in it. You know what happened here. The only possible other twist was an angry Hangman, but that's not in his character right now, in spite of what I myself said last week. Gasp, I changed my mind about something. In an immediate aftermath of WrestleDream, I'm like, oh, okay, they've got a Trios title match. I can see where this is going. They're going to be defending the belts, and then Hangman's going to cost him as retribution, and that's what triggers Joe. No, that's not Hangman's character. You were wrong, imp. That's not it at all. Much prefer this, where Joe is the one that's angry, and Hangman's obviously talking about getting retribution and saying that Joe's making a mistake here, but making sure to keep Joe in that role of being the antagonist, whilst also painting Hangman in that vein of, you don't mess with this guy. Remember what he did to Swerve. Like, if you push this man, he's perfectly capable of going to that darker side. But that's not in his character, so how did this one finish? Instead, we got Ricochet and GOA all out in the matching coats to cause distraction, and Joe didn't hesitate 1 second before switching into the Coquina Clutch for the win. After the match, Shivani was in the ring to question Joe about WrestleDream. It's good to be in San Antonio, because you've got to know, when you have a man like Powerhouse Hobbs around, it's good to have all those fat San Antonio women around to keep him occupied. Not what Tony asked. Not Tony asked at all, but I got a really good laugh out of Hobbs selling the joke, miming and losing a test of strength to said women. In terms of just comedic timing stuff from Hobbs, it was really well done. Doing the test of strength, a lesser comedian would have sold the test of strength and just gone, oh yeah, this is what I like. But instead, he does a test of strength and then loses and falls to his knees like, oh no, I'm too weak, I'm not strong enough for this. I really like that. Joe then related his future whooping of the Hangman to local sports teams with their recent performances. I'm assuming those recent performances weren't good given the crowd reaction. But I don't know your sports. Your sports don't always penetrate through your bubbles. Now, we'll get back to this with a later Hangman promo. Quick little bit from Wee Dobby Allin. In the ring, directly addressed his potential for being the face of AEW with all of that passion. Just a quick Wee promo full of confidence, shouting that he's willing to die for this place. As long as he's breathing, he'll be going for every one of the Death Riders. I said that WrestleDream did a lot to position him as a main event guy rather than just a strong featured player, and this is really putting the fuel behind that. Obviously, in this moment, it'd be very easy, just like I was at the weekend, being like, oh, Darby could be the next guy for Hangman. That doesn't mean it's soon. If they can prove that the Darby Allin thing can last and they can really fuel it and make him feel like a main character for a longer period of time, then they really could have something in terms of the successor to Hangman. Because it feels like that's what his reign should end on. For Hangman's reign to properly end on the best note possible for what he as a champion was trying to accomplish, I would much rather it feels like a passing of the torch to a potential new main character, rather than heel does screwy thing and takes championship off him. That's where I'm standing at the moment. AEW are doing a really good job of just convincing you of all the potential avenues. Who would you like to be the person, the successor to Hangman's title reign? Right now, my number one vote feels like Darby Allin, but I know that they are good enough that they will present other ideas and you start to buy into them. Obviously, at the moment, no one's really bought into the challenges for Hangman. You can see why they're challenging hangers. There's some really good reasons as to it building character for either the Hangman or for something like Cal Fletcher, where it's evidently long-term in much needed match. But Darby Allin feels like the first proposal of, what about this guy? Could he be next? Onto the backstage bit. Jack Perry and Luchasaurus with their bag of money. Perry talked all inspirational jabber in the adrenaline of having just won a wrestling. Later in the show, the Young Bucks were banging on Tony Khan's door again. Renee asked them what's next. We don't know what's next. We're poor. We're broke. They want a money match, teaming with anybody, against anybody. Tony, wild eyes, seemingly unable to not look into the camera, set up an all-star 8-man 400k tag for Collision. And my God, what a main event that was, but we'll get to it when we get to Collision. Also, I just love Tony Khan on camera. just the wild-eyed, almost like non-blinking, just getting through it. But yeah, Mox then cut a promo quite literally looking at himself in the mirror after his WrestleDream loss. He knows who he is, but Darby made him a liar. Great motivation for Mox to do whatever he does next. A four-team tag, winner choosing their first round tag opponents for the tournament, Megan Bain and Penelope Ford versus Sky Blue and Julia Hart versus Harley Cameron and Willow Nightingale versus Queen, Aminata and Jamie Hayter. Two lasses in at once, a great little way to give us some final hype before the tournament starts. There's been critique of the titles being announced a while ago and then we've had to wait for the tournament, but my covering AEW honeymoon period must still be strong because I feel the exact opposite. I really like them taking time to set up teams rather than just throwing them into quick pairings for the tournament. They've more thrown them into slower pairings and established them for the tournament. It feels to me more like announce titles week one, start tournament the next week. It's the set way of doing it rather than the best and only way of doing it. And here is a different way of doing it. Doesn't mean it's wrong or bad. Doing it this way means that I care far more about these pairings because they didn't go right into the tournament. The other suggestion was leaving the announcing of the title tournament till the week before the tournament, but I don't really agree that that's the problem here. That feels like that is the agreed way of doing things. Keeping the title in the spotlight, you announce it, immediately do the tournament. That's the way that it's done. You keep it like that. Da, da, da. But I still feel like they have built hype towards the tournament. I just care more about the characters and why they even want these titles in the first place. So for me, they've done a good job of setting that up, so I actually care more during the tournament. Like, we literally just saw what happened in WWE with teams thrown together. Surely what we have here is better than that. You can set up teams first, then title announcement, then tournament, which I think is a lot of the critiques where you could have done it this way. I just find nothing wrong with announcing the titles so you directly know why all these teams are being set up, rather than, they're probably setting up a tag thing. Because we, in our little bubble online, we know the things. Like, oh, they're probably setting up a tag thing. Or you can see around you, characters are setting up for a tag thing. Like, oh, they might be doing a tournament. And then it gets officially announced, yeah, we're doing a tournament, and go to that. I don't see anything wrong with announcing the tournament so you directly know why all these pairings are being set up, and you've got a few weeks of all these different pairings being slowly put together. Then you go into the tournament. Because they have built to it every week. They have done it on TV. So it's not like they said it and never mentioned it again. It was mentioned every single week. So I personally am absolutely fine with doing it this way. I do agree, it's not the established way of doing things, but that doesn't make it automatically bad. I personally feel invested now that we're getting to the tournament. So for me, that's mission success. For me, that's my proof. And that's kind of why I started this asterisk being like, am I just in my covering AEW honeymoon period right now? Whenever I engage with anything like wider in terms of the different reviews for AEW and stuff, it really just feel like everyone else is having a bit of a grumpy time with it, and I'm just having a whale of time. Just that honeymoon period of not having to cover the other place and just seeing like, no, genuinely, we've got it good here. Genuinely, we've got it good. I'm British, so I'm expecting it to wear off. Expect bad times, because bad times will rain on you. It's gonna happen. But right now, still that honeymoon period, and I'm still clicking with things that I'm seeing other people not really be happy about. And for me, this is just one of them where I've been invested in these teams, so I don't quite see the negative point other than, oh, this is being done differently. It kind of got gut reactions to it, which doesn't automatically make it bad. There's no such thing as thing equals bad. It's more thing done badly. This match itself was a fun little mid-show chaos. Jamie and Aminata positioned as the only team we haven't seen flow in a straight-up tag match. So can you guess what this belt was used to do? Jamie Hayter stepping in to dance with Megan Bain got a strong reaction. After the Wrestle Dream build and match, it really does feel like we've got a vibe of the old Jamie Hayter back. Bain's dive and Penelope Ford moonsault in tandem to the Gathering Women ringside. Poor Penelope's knees clobbered Sky's head and kind of stopped her rotation, and it looked like Ford broke her fall with her arm, so ouch. Luckily, seemed relatively alright. In the height of the chaos, everyone got their shit in, including a big old willow pounce on the Megasus. Hayter and Aminata winning, as the last team whose flow we needed to taste before the tournament. A great combination of Queen Headbutt and Haterade combination for the win. Oof Headbutt, oof Lariat. It's like a really strong, impactful finish. The Southampton lads grabbed the mic afterwards, taking absolutely no time to choose Sky Blue and Julia Hart as their first round opponents. And I like that, as either the baddies are all cocky, being like, huh, you chose us, this is a mistake for you. And then, of course, the Queen Aminata and Jamie Hayter are so tough that it really wasn't a mistake. Or I really like the other side of it, where it's the goodies falling for the baddies trap. And in choosing the Sisters of Sin, they've made a grave mistake and they are going to lose because of shenanigans and whatnot. I'm fine with either way. I don't feel like either of the teams are going to win. So for me, it's absolutely fine to use this to just bubble their blood and guts. The Mercedes Monet celebration. Yes, please. Yes, please. I like being on Blue Sky for seeing stuff like this, because when adversity takes of somebody who's like, I don't like this in my wrestling, there's something about the kind of people I see on Blue Sky where that person will also mention being like, but I'm fully aware that I have my taste in wrestling, that I've come from this, I've been made from this. So when that person says they don't like this in their wrestling, that's them being fully aware that they've got a certain thing that they like. This, for me, I say it every week, I absolutely love Wrestle Bollocks. The hologram clone, what on earth is going on there? Total tat, total nonsense, all here for it. So the Mercedes Monet puppet causing a heated distraction, meaning that Monet then cuts a promo with her, all of her titles, one of the greatest wrestlers in the world, and that's what we've been establishing. She then cuts a promo in the ring on a puppet of herself before then pushing the puppet into the cake. Oh, I love this. Before we get to the actual segment, a quick little earlier today, as Monet arrived in her fancy shiny car with shirtless muscle lads in blazers stood wearing all of her titles. Chris Statlander had a wee backstage bit with an A2, no hesitation in setting up a match between them for full gear. Monet read off cards and delivered Monet's words with genuine professionalism. She just gets this. The lads with the belts out on the ramp, but it's Mini Monet appearing on the table that speaks to bring Monet herself out. Even directed Renee to dance, and hilarious dramatic zoom on the puppet when the music hit. Pissed off Mercedes came on out and shouted her boys to the back. The crowd were chanting CEO like she would have wanted, but Harley had ruined it. Turning on the crowd, who were literally just chanting her name. Harley, you are so pathetic. Are you that desperate for attention? Tonight is about me. This is my moment. This is my celebration. Dunked Mini Monet's face into the cake with a great little zoom on the puppet with its mouth open in anguish. I love that. Monet went for Harley when a surprise stat lifted her up onto her shoulders. Immediate karma with the Ultimo's face planted in the cake, just like the puppets. I repeatedly say I love wrestling bollocks, and in that bracket, this was top tier shit. Absolutely top tier. You could probably do a John Moxley, Toru Yano kind of thing for that. with Monet and the puppet and the Statlander and stuff. Mercedes threw the table on top of the cake to end the segment, with Chris and Harley celebrating their plan working to perfection. Two matches later in the show, Mercedes was interviewed by Alicia, still covered in the cake. Like, where is makeup? She says, shouting. Like, it has been two matches, and you know in AEW, those matches aren't like 5 minutes. Like, she's been covered in that cake for a while. Athena returned in this backstage segment and suggested the two longest reigning champions in AEW team up and add the women's tag team titles to the collection. Our final biggest team. Finally added, as the 18 tournament bracket was revealed before the main event, and the first match is set for next week, Armonata and Hayter versus Sky Blue and Julia Hart, as we already know, and Willow and Hardy versus Monet and Athena. These are two matches on the left side of the bracket, and on the right side, Windsor and Rio versus Tony Amina and Bane and Ford versus Ty Jay? I want to say Ty Jay. I could do it from Birmingham. Ty Jay? No, it's Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, Ty Jay. Mina Shokawa got her minute with Monet backstage, calling herself and Tony's team the Timeless Love Bombs. Tekla stepped in, mocked Sheena for Tony not being there. They met in Japan, and now they meet on Collision. But yes, absolutely loved the mini Monet stuff. All here for wrestling bollocks just like this. The dramatic zoom when Mercedes Monet came out herself onto the puppet. Absolute nonsense. And there's something about AEW. Genuinely believe for a split second that they were just doing a mini little build to Hardy Cameron versus Mercedes just for like a little thing that we're going to maybe get on a Dynamite or Collision, because that's the kind of little match that AEW just throw out there and just do. Which they can use to their benefit, because I wasn't expecting Stat to just power up and get involved like that. Speaking of silly fun in wrestling, Kyle O'Reilly vs. John Moxley and the conglomeration with a fun new 90s sitcom style entrance video with reluctant Roddy and all. Also quite the contrast with serious Mox's walk through the crowd. Stompy submission man Kyle was surely the last style of wrestler Mox actually wanted to wrestle after Derby. The self-confident act truly tested as O'Reilly worked and talked them limbs. Gotch style pile driver dropped the conglomerator on his surgically repaired neck, but he kicked out and Mox seemed to enter a zone of frustration. Danielson and commentary having a great time with Kyle's transitions and counters. Such a great character note, as well as Mox lost any way to get out. Instead of tapping, Mox struck the ref and the match ended in an O'Reilly DQ win. Immediately heated. It means something when you do these things rarely. And for me, DQ finishes feel far more rare now that I'm really generally not seeing them. I've hung up my WWE boots in August and I'm not seeing them. So when they happen in AEW, I'm not fatigued of them in my mind because they're not happening. I'm not seeing them. Ref's out first, conglomerators out second, with Kyle jumping at Mox and commentary hitting on this being the man's biggest win of his career. Plus in the aftermath of Derby, and following that promo from John Moxley where he's looking in the mirror, telling himself, I know exactly who I am. And then this here's been like, I can't lose again, shit. Just having that huge reaction, striking the referee so he isn't seen to be tapping again. For me, such a great note with John Moxley. And it means that we're getting these mini conglomeration versus Death Rider matches with just two completely different feeling factions. You got serious moody lads walking through the crowd, and then you've got, yay, it's family fun with the conglomerators. Now, speaking of, immediately following that singles match, we did get conglomeration versus Death Riders, Orange Cassidy, Mark Briscoe and Roderick Strong versus Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia. A match that was staying in the momentum of the previous one. Roddy now had a real strong reason to be a team player against the Death Boys. Enjoyed Mark Briscoe having none of Daniel Garcia's shit, whilst the crowd enjoyed Wheeler Yuta taking literally any move. Cassidy got the hot tag and ran lukewarm, creating the room for Briscoe to actually be the one to run hot on all three of the baddies, hitting an AE dub height with a surprise whisper into Briscoe to the outside. They were not expecting him to do that. A match broken down with Briscoe and Yuta, the two in the ring, as the others jumped in to try and swing. In the end, Claudio and Garcia held off at ringside as Mark nailed the J-driller on Wheeler Yuta to a lovely cheer. Pac jumped in to attack, but Big Tom Ishii was already primed to counter the Geordie lad. Mott's back out, so was Kyle, but the Death Riders had the numbers, and the launch out to the announce table was set for Cassidy before Darby Allin fulfilled his promise with a bat to Claudio's leg. So we're both getting silly conglomeration versus Death Rider stuff, and Darby a bit more serious following through with his promises. The TNT champion Kyle Fletcher, the cocky Aussie, proclaimed that he proved at WrestleDream that he really will be TNT champion for a very, very, very long time. Mark Briscoe then came out to retort, asking for another match. He's been icing his balls all week, but he wants one more shot. A straight up no. Like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course not. Of course not. Like that Briscoe wasn't at all able to hype Kyle Fletcher into giving him the match, like making him angry or whatever. I did like that. But also, it felt like, narratively, coming out of WrestleDream, everybody was okay to move on from this match. That's what it felt like. Plus also, it was the decider match. It was the fifth one. I don't see the point of keeping this going for the characters, unless you do want to give Mark Briscoe the title, which long term doesn't feel right for Cal Fletcher. I don't see the point, because that's what I talk about with AEW with a lot of my positives, where even if the individual segment may not always hit amazingly, I can immediately see what they're going for, and long term I'm like, yes, awesome, great, I'm excited. Normally the short term hits anyway, but when it doesn't, I can see what they're going for. I don't see the bigger picture with this one. I got it at WrestleDream, especially what it means for Kyle Fletcher going forward. I don't get why Kyle Fletcher would give a match. That makes the response immediately like, yeah, of course not. Yeah, I'm totally with you. It makes all the sense in the world to say no. I understand immediately. But what I don't quite get is why a sixth match between the two helps either character. I'm yet to be sold on it. Gone on about this show of them doing a really good job of selling me on either storylines, characters, directions. This is the one. This is the only one this week where I'm like, I don't quite know why we're going here. Don't quite know. There's other double dips like we're doing Hammond and Samoa Joe still. I literally just talked about Darby Allin still going after the Death Riders. This is the only return to a storyline post-WrestleDream that I don't quite understand why it would still be going. You got time to sell it on me, Tony. It's week one. I'm not there with you yet, but you know, you can sell me on it. And finally, the main event, the AEW Unified Championship, Kazuchika Okada versus Bandido. Whoa, what a match. What a match. A hot start and such a great reaction to Bandido pointing the finger guns at the Rainmaker. All for Bandido finally getting his Dynamite main event singles showcase. His 2025 has been incredible. It's just that the majority of it has been on Ring of Honor. And that was really highlighted as a replay of a corkscrew in the ring ended just in time for a tope to the outside. The Master Outlaw Luchador was really given plenty of room to be awesome. Like, one arm strong lifting up Okada. In the closing flow, the tag champion able to block and rock Okada, not okay. The crowd so behind the challenger in his slow crawl to the pin cover. Hit the 21-20 plex, but because of the hurty arm, he couldn't hold on for the pin. So many reversals from Bandido too. Even after an Okada dropkick, he immediately cradled into a pin before the Rainmaker could be even talked up. The second Rainmaker attempt ducked and amped applause after Bandido then hit his own. X knee hit, but the 21-20, slightly back from the ropes, was slipped under and a snap Rainmaker defended in a champion survival. Such an amazing hot flover finish where descriptions of what happened are never going to fulfill it. The Don Callis family all on out afterwards to celebrate, but Takeshita made an entrance of his own. The IWGP heavyweight champion on the ramp staring daggers at Okada. Big Kazu all gleeful and cheeky in response to the anger. We got Don Callis' character take afterwards, so I can talk about him when we talk about that stuff. However, just the way that they are building this, it feels so great, and it feels like we've got a really motivated Okada too. It's just a recipe for something beautiful, and they've been building this really well. It's just such a solid build, and it feels like it is guaranteed that when this match actually happens, that it's going to be such a hot match. It's a story that's been really well told. Plus, you just gotta love Okada's cheeky face. Absolutely loving that Takeshita is so angry that he can't help but smile. And we'll get to Don Callis, as he talks about it on Collision a little bit. Now, speaking of, it's a jump over to Collision. I prefaced going through these with what I felt about the shows this week. Like, absolutely fine building shows without the most, like, crazy stuff happening during the shows, but both of them had really good main events. So pretty much my review for Dynamite is the same for Collision. They both had the same strengths and weaknesses. So let's waste no time and jump on over. Staying in San Antonio, Texas, for Pac versus Tomohiro Ishii. Before we get to that, we'll talk about the AEW World Champion Hangman Page and the backstage bits, but let's play a sound clip from Pac and Tomohiro Ishii.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
So as I said, even though we just listened to Pac versus Top Big Tomo, we are going to be talking about that in a second. But first, the AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page. Hangers now walks as the bigger man, saying that he thinks he embarrassed Joe at WrestleDream, that he became frustrated and angry. All three of them should have known better than to make an enemy out of him. Love the shift to Page now being the proven and confident champion. Joe, when I find you, I'm going to ruin your entire life. Ah, there's the other side of Hangman. Like, yes, both he and Chris Statlander are doing what they can to incorporate the different versions of themselves into their current flow. Adam Page's feels way more natural. I mean, look what Chris Statlander's got to work with. She's got a way harder job mixing the alien with the serious Stoke stuff, with the big, strong, beefy strong person stuff. Like, she's got a much harder time of flowing all that together. Page here, it feels like you can have these different storylines to bring out the different edges to him. So yes, he does want to be this role model of a champion, but there is that ruthless edge to him that we saw under Swerve that can be brought out of him. And I like that now that he's this goody champion, he's not just all like, oh, I'm goody, I'm going to make everybody happy. I'm going to be the role model, everybody, da da da. Like, no, if someone pisses him off, he's going to show that ruthless edge again. And he was using that to get all aggressive with Joe, calling him out on his shit, and then walking away with his music playing. Also nice to see this without, like, any interruption or anything. It's just like, no, he's the champion. That's why he gets time on the show. Oh, yeah, that makes him feel like a big deal. Crazy. Also, before we get to Pac and Tomo Ishii, let's jump to the backstage bits. Tay-Jay backstage with Lexi, Anna talking about fighting to make these tag titles a thing for a really long time, before Nixon Newell and her friend interrupted to set up a wee tag match. And I waited for later in the show, being like, oh, when the tag match happens, I'll write down the name of her tag team partner. Wasn't paying attention. See, it wasn't on this show. So, okay. But yeah, nice to see the Welsh lass and, well, whoever her friend is. I didn't recognise her. I mean, I am not clued in to the independent scene like I was like 5-6 years ago. Pre-COVID me, I was paying full attention. Post-COVID me, like, diddly dick. Not really paying attention at all. Jamie Hayter and Queen Aminata and the Sisters of Sin also got a wee promo, a pre-recorded jabber with each team going on about how they're going to win. VTR play to announce and hype a spooky show for man, Bobby Lee Lashes, Ricochet, Hook and Samoa Joe for a AEW Championship match at Full Gear. And here's the Don Callis bit. Outside, interviewed by Lexi, related the family issues to your everyday family disagreements, and he's got an entire family full of alpha athletes. What do you think's going to happen? Okada and Takeshita are just fine, because they both take direction from him. They both want to please him. And he announced the Don Callis Family Summit for Dynamite. Okay, here we go. This is the big blow-up angle, finally. Or at least it's setting it up to be that. AEW does have a habit of... I don't mean this in a negative way. I do mean this in a... You could predict it now because they've done it enough times. But they'll have a big segment like this, and they'll show front and centre just the whole animosity, put it there, and it's like a final attempt to get all the pieces to stay together, and the big blow-up doesn't happen here. At the summit, something gets set up, and the animosity will play out in the aftermath of the thing set up at the summit. As in, moving at a much more different pace than you do the summit, because that's where the big angle is. But I still love Don Callis just being so confident that there is nothing wrong between Takeshita and Okada. And the smile from Okada at WrestleDream was hidden from Don Callis because he was looking away up the ramp at Takeshita. Like, there's lots of little notes where I just love that. The dad of the family genuinely hasn't seen what everybody else has. After the break, right back outside, and now Lexi's with the Outrunners and Dalton Castle. Before they could answer, Anthony, Bowens and Matt Castle were arguing off camera, and the whole interview kind of just fell off the rails. Now we get to Pac versus Tomohiro Ishii. And when I say that, I mean Pac's promo outside in the rain. Like, we'll get to the match itself. I've said before that Collision has lots of backstage bits compared to Dynamite. The Death Riders were outside in the rain as full kit wanker Pac cut a promo on the Stone Pitbull. Now listen here, you mutt. I don't care how much wacky backy you smoke. Pac one-liners striking again. Ishii out to the new conglomeration theme. The presentation between these two stables couldn't be any more different. Don't worry, once Big Tom got to wrestling, we were locked into a serious fight with spirit and choppy affair. Pac with his more serious grappler look, properly slowing his style down, and more than happy to have the talented lads at ringside slow things down even more with referee distraction fists. The old no-neck doggo is one tough bastard, rising with roars and power and such. Pac seemingly determined to show his toughness, invited the chops, and immediately regretted it, which was the spark that ignited Ishii's flow up into an amazing delayed suplex off Brett's rope. If you're on social media, that was probably the most capped spot off this match. Less wowie, quick, athletic Pac, more big tough power bombs and muscle tensing suplexes. I mean, if I worked out that much, like, I'd be probably wanted to show it off. That's why Pac just walks about in his underpants. Like, he works hard on that body, guys. He works hard. Tell him he looks good. He put a smile on his wee little Geordie face. But this match was a fighting spirit world Ishii is very used to, as he kept kicking out and forced Pac to use his baddie friends once again, running lariat finally enough to end the wrestling potato after Wheeler Yuta hit a running knee at ringside. And yes, Tony Schiavone and Nigel McGuinness were on commentary going, whoa, look at Pac's body. Whoa. He's a very good wrestler, that Pac. I'm interested to see how well this more serious version of his gets over. It's very difficult to go from one style like he was doing to something like this. But I feel like if someone can pull it off, it's him. To be fair, what's not going to hurt is him delivering an amazing one-liner in the Geordie accent every single week. Tekla versus Mina Shirakawa. Speaking of presentation contrasts, first we thrash, then we dance. Bad for your neck, good for your hips. Julie Hart and Sky Blue strode on out the second Mina concentrated on Tekla's leg because we needed an ad break lead-in. And a wee excuse to slow it right down till we were back on air. A Shirakawa flash once we came back, running charges and a high knee to get San Antonio clapping. Mina moves finally started to land, her flashy spinny tornado, striking spinning back fist, even winning out in a top rope corner slap battle, but she forgot about Tekla's core strength and the spider just leant back up to suplex her down. Nay spear for you after the spider walk, a striking flow instead, and the near fall had the crowd properly behind her. A shame the sling blade jumping off the top didn't come off, but the crowd are so into the women's division right now that they don't care. Sure, it was a little bit of a kind reaction to the sling blade not really coming off, but straight to the final flow they went, immediately onto the next wrestling. Heart and Blue even distractions, Tekla Spear before tangling poor Mina in her submission web for the win. And closer to Blood and Guts we flow. The MXM casting call. I generally have such a happy reaction when I see these guys walk out. I know I'm in for some nonsense. I'm just in for just 5 minutes of just brief fun. Also, Mansoor's bullying of the ring announcer just gets better. Because it gets better every week. It also gets way more vicious and way more mean. But the reason I'm absolutely fine with it is that he faces retribution for it immediately, every single time. It doesn't matter. And that then leads him to be more mean, to be more bullying. Like, she becomes the target of his bullying. That he says these absolutely awful things about the ring announcer. Then he immediately faces the consequences, beaten up right away. This contest is a singles match, and they go, yay, as the lads all disrobed ready, only for a big, strong Mexican woman to walk on out and tie his face to go into shock. I said this last week, such a great mid-card gimmick where the match type is as open as the challenge itself. And this woman was Olympia from CMLL. She won after some fireman's carry squats and a power lift. Valkyrie carried by the boys to the back with an amazing dead cell as Olympia flexed her muscles in the ring. But who is Olympia? Why is Olympia here? Later, the strong lass had a quick re-promo to camera, challenged Monet to her CMLL championship next week on Collision. So yes, it's a quick little 2-week program. Introduce her, have her title match. Oh, okay. Nice and brief, nice and quick. Brian Keith versus Ace Austin. Ace Austin arrived in August, joined the Bang Bang Gang in September, and now has his October booking against Brian Keith. Like, hey, that does mean he's technically being featured every month. It also does mean the AEW audience still pops bigs for his apron handstand. Like, he's only had one match. Like, sure, it's a signature spot of his, but they've only seen it once. So it's still fresh and new. Ace has his athletic style, but Brian's got a strong head. An Austin running charge was just stopped dead with a headbutt drum. His finisher, the fold for the win, a running spinning neckbreaker thing, and the lad got his first AEW victory. The Frat House, Griff Garrison versus Hook. We are in the quick match territory. A wee display for Hookerton as Eddie just had a fun time at ringside. Garrison's long hair glorious as he was tossed overhead by the suplex boy. Red one for the win. Eddie Kingston with a chair to make sure there's no post-match antics, all because he's been drinking too much. We're about to find out. Nige continuing to be such a knob. Just on commentary. And the main event, my personal favourite match of the week, just because it was pure fun. A Cardiff vs Bandido is the best match, like if you're rating it or whatever, that's the best match. This was the most fun. 400k all-star tag match, the Young Bucks teaming with FTR versus Jet Speed and Jurassic Express. That's right, another big money match. Jurassic Express getting close to millionaires off of just two nights work. I don't think I'm surprising anyone when I say this was the most fun match of the week, because this was just a pure ball of energetic fun. Just a constant pace with any potential downtime immediately cut off by Jet Speed athleticism or Young Bucks ingenuity. Stokely with powder into Kevin Knight's eyes finally completely turned the match into the baddie's favour, but Knight just kept on kicking out. Luchasaurus with the heat again, all four of them posing, hyped up on Brett's rope tall. Power and glory, suplex splash, elbow from Matt, 450 from Nick, like, okay, yes, we are in the final flow of a Young Bucks match. Two Shatter Machines sent us right back into Luchasaurus fending off all by himself, and yet again successful. Just love how strong they booked him in this match. Duck the Furl Poison knee triggers and chokeslammed everybody. It's just really nice to have a match full of seven really talented guys and one undefeatable monster. I just love the dynamic there. Bailey, the legal man for the spinning kick, Knight in the flying man for the awesome UFA frog splash, and the win. Went off air with the baddies all arguing as Schiavone hyped the four-way tag on Dynamite, where the teams will all be against each other. But seriously, I didn't really bash through the momentum or the notes for that match, but generally, really fun. Cannot sing the praises of it enough in that regard. To be fair, we had that stretch of really fun multi-person tag matches when we went to the ECW arena. They just did too many of them, too many in a row. Have a break, then give a fun reason, do a fun match. Anyway, that does bring me to the end of this week's review. Are my shows reviews? What do you call my shows? There's a reason I call them adventures. It's like, we're going through this journey together. I'm not always commenting on everything. It's like, yeah, this thing happened. Right, on we go. Like, I don't need to deliberate on, just dwell on every single point of it. There's so many podcasts that do that. There's so many out there. Anyway, yeah, a week with perfectly fine buildings that did get me excited for pretty much the majority of the stuff. I feel like I've only got that one outlier in the Kyle Fletcher Briscoe thing where I'm like, I'm not totally buying into this yet. I'll see if you're able to get me in over the next few weeks. But on the get-go, don't quite see the point of this next match. But everything else, I could immediately see, okay, this is what you're building to. Absolutely fine with it. At the time I was watching the Hook match, I was like, why is this happening? And then very quickly immediately found out afterwards because he's in the singles match for the AEW No. 1 contendership. Like, I don't know why he's in that match, but that then makes the Collision match make sense. So it's like, oh, okay, I see why you've had this random Hook jobber match, but also I don't know why he's in a No. 1 contenders match. That's kind of come out of nowhere. In the hype video, they linked it to Samoa Samoa Joe being in it. It's like, oh, they had an amazing match, so Hooky's going to get his opportunity too. Like, I mean, it doesn't make logistical sense, but it does make wrestling hype sense. And I am a full believer in, fuck it, just do it. Like, who cares? Just do the thing. This recording's gone on longer than I was hoping for, but I'm pretty certain that it was like a lot of pauses figuring stuff out. I'm recording this at a way later time than normal, so I'm a big sleepy boy. So hopefully things flowed and made sense. But I'll be back this time next week to talk about AEW Dynamite and Collision in another what's going to be relatively normal show. Actually, that's not true. Spooky times ahead. It's spooky week. So we've got a whole bunch of spooky stuff. But thank you for listening, liking in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never taken for granted. With that, I say thank you. Listen to me on Friday on the AEW match guide stuff that Sammy's doing for that tournament. And listen to the other two that are already out right now. This is a quick, brief thing. It's almost like an advertisement for like way more time of me. Those shows are like 2 hours each. It's like a quick little preview of the giggly British guy. So anyway, I will see you next week. With that, I bid you adieu. Ta-ra.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.